Hi, and welcome to The Expanse of Podcasts. You are listening today to episode number 250. Actually, quite the milestone, and this has been a year of milestones, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But pretty cool today, 250 episodes deep. Another interesting stat that I saw, by the way, is that today we are recording this on, what, the 6th of June, 2025. We are now closer to 2050 than what we are to the year 2000.
Yeah, I saw that,
it's like crazy to think about. But welcome. If this is your very first time that you're tuning into The Expanse of, it's great to have you with us. My name is Eric. I'm an author and keynote speaker. I'm one half of The Expanse of podcast. I'm always joined by my ever elegant co-host, John Sane, who is also an author and keynote speaker. We come at from different angles, one being more futurist, one being more leadership focused. But we come together and we bring the left and the right, the yin and the yang, to The Expanse of podcast. And 250 episodes later, we're still doing it. John, how's things going, dude?
Yeah, great. Wow, what an intro, eh? Jeez, that took, you know, that felt like, you know, when you're on, when you're sitting on the sideline and they start to introduce you and somehow they found a bio from 1978. I don't know where they find these bios. And then they start reading it and you're like, bro, where did they get this from? And you're sitting there in the audience and it's taking so long and you're like, I sent them the right bio. Why are they reading this thing? And this intro was very similar to that. I was like, there's a longest intro.
It was long.
But anyway, it's nice
I think 250 deserves a longer intro.
Yeah, you're right. And I also always think that we always have the same people listening to the pod. And obviously there's different people that are arriving and it's nice to have an introduction once in a while. I remember, And I remember in my restaurant, I used to tell my staff, you see 100 plates of pasta. The customer only sees one. Make sure that one plate of pasta is amazing. Just because you see so many doesn't mean the customer does. So the relationship they have is with a very specific one meal. And I guess this is the same here. And I also think what you did miss out on is have we recorded a podcast since our book became a bestseller? I can't remember that. Have we?
No, because that's part of additional milestones. I mean, how long did you want me to have that intro for?
Yeah,
I realized at some point I needed to cut it off.
Thank goodness I stopped you. Thank goodness I stopped you. Okay. Go on. Why don't you introduce that milestone, Eric?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the great things about the pod is that having gone for 250 episodes, we've done thousands of minutes of audio and we recently refined that into a book. And the book came out, I think it's about 3 weeks ago now, 4 weeks ago. And we've hit the Nielsen's bestseller list, which is an incredible milestone because the Nielsen's bestseller list looks at all the books sold across the country. It's a formal measurement, you know,
it's actually a very revered measurement. Formal objective measurement.
Objective.
Because the New York Times and the Washington Post and all of these other ones are not objective. They're subjective. And we only found this out because they were in a court case. And in the court case, they were pressed up against your numbers don't add up to your list. And they came out and said, yo, actually, we're subjective. We're not objective. So Nielsen's is actually the only objective list in the world. And we hit that on a few different benchmarks,
And then it was so cool. Like on the... When we went to go do the book launch in Joburg, I passed through OR Tambo and the airport in Joburg, and I was looking for the book and I found it, but it was sort of hidden, you know, in the business section, and I was a bit irritated and frustrated that it wasn't getting more attention, you know, in a big sort of display in the middle of the book the bookstore. And then when I passed back now this time, because I went to Joburg again for a gig, and when I came back, I walked in because you had to go check where the book is. And this time we were on the top 10 bestsellers in Exclusive Books as well. And Exclusive Books is the biggest books retailer in the country. So, yeah. So an award-winning podcast that became a best-selling book. Pretty cool.
I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot. And, and it doesn't feel like that, to be honest. It feels like we're just carrying on and we still have our own little insecurities happening and we wanting to be bigger. And like, yeah, I was thinking about it this morning, actually preparing for the pod this morning. I was like, wow, what an amazing milestone. Although in saying all of that, book sales are down globally. And we have also found that the actual movement of books has changed dramatically since we brought just our last book out, let alone books in the past and like 5, 10 years ago. Just like 2, 3 years ago, the sales of books, the numbers of sales has diminished considerably. And when Eric and I found out how many books we've sold to get onto the bestseller list, we were in hysterics laughing because we were like, this is so weird because it's exactly, I imagine, how CD sales started to go eventually. When you've got streaming music available to you, why are you buying a CD? There's just no reason for you to be buying a CD. And I just, without getting too miffed out about it, I just think books are going the same way as CDs. I don't see it being any different because you got access to unbelievable information on podcasts and YouTube and just unbelievable. And I've been downloading all sorts of weird and strange things from YouTube. And man, I have learned so much just in the last week from just listening to different 20-minute, you know, little documentaries, and just very different from buying a book and reading a book. So, but thanks to everybody who bought the book. And obviously we've got all those corporate deals going on where you can buy it as a corporate and you can have your company logo attached to it and your CEO write a forward. And also that's moving forward. So, and I think that's a bigger market for books these days than a B2C idea. I think a B2B market's really the right place to be playing. But yeah, thanks to everybody who bought it. And how amazing that we've got those two accolades now. So congratulations to you and thanks to all the listeners.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because at the one book, especially at the Cape Town launch, we were talking about books and the future of books. And it was so funny to be on stage talking about our latest book and going like, we aren't sure about the future of books and where this is going. And one of the interesting parts of it is that the internet is being flooded with books right now. And I was, you know, on Facebook the other day and someone said, they now have trained one of the LLM models to be able to write a 45,000 word book. And we know what that book is going to read like. You know, it's going to be average. And the problem is that if you can pump that out and you can pump out hundreds of these books, because what they'll do is they'll pump out 100, they'll put them on Amazon, they'll get a few people to go and buy them very quickly, it'll pump up the sales, it'll give it the Amazon bestseller title, and then they'll just sell it for like 99 cents. And the idea would be that you're trying to sell volume, like of lots of different titles in order to be making money off it. But then, of course, what happens is that if you're someone who likes to read books, now you have to go wade through thousands and thousands and thousands of crappy books. And like, you don't know what's good and what's not.
Well, you could ask ChatGPT, but also our agents will start to suggest things for us as well. So I think that we'll be able to get through that. You know, with agents coming on board over the next couple of years, I think everything's going to dramatically change, you know. So I don't know if we'll have that problem. I think from this current level of understanding of information and books, yes, that is a problem. But I think with agents coming in, I think all of those problems fall away. In fact, I don't even know if you'd be reading books that are non-fictional. I think you'd read books that are fictional to give your imagination that ability to create stories. But I think as far as fiction is concerned, I think there's non-fiction. I think there's much better ways to engage with the information, you know, with AI teachers. Have you seen these AI students that are doing 99% better than kids with normal human teachers? These AI teacher
yeah,
kids
I've seen
are
that.
Cooking. And like, then you realize, wow, of course. I mean, the way I work with ChatGPT and it's at its rudimentary stage is so much better than working with people. In fact, I've got friends that are now working with ChatGPT as their psychologists. Like quite literally, understanding every aspect of their lives and giving them advice as a psychologist, let alone strategist, let alone designer, let alone copywriter, let alone thinking partner, let alone anything. Mm. So yeah, I think with agents, I don't think we'll have that problem, to be honest. But I do think books will become history quicker. Mm.
Dude, I was looking at, you know, obviously VO3 came out a while ago. And since then, we've just seen this like onslaught of
video,
different you know, videos. And like one of the interesting ones for me is they do these little sitcoms. I don't know if you've seen them. It's just like little snippets, like where I'll send it to you. They'll do like very typical sort of like a family sitting on a couch and then, you know, there's some sort of joke and then they move into a bar and then they move in. But it's just these little sitcom skits generated by AI. And it's so good. Like I look at that and I wouldn't even know if I wasn't attuned to the fact that, oh, this is, you know, this format. So I don't even know where we're going with this stuff, hey? Like it blows my mind to think about it.
I was going to say, but earlier you said that the book will be average. I was like, I don't know if it'll be average. I think the book will be very, very good. Like, you know, an AI written book. I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, maybe in the future. in the future.
No,
not
but
now.
Even look at these sitcoms. But even look at these sitcoms, you know, sometimes.
But these sitcoms are, yeah, I hear you. But I think a lot of them are written by people still.
Do you think they're scripted? Do you think they're scripted by people? Are they? Are
yeah,
they?
I think okay. they're still scripted okay. by people. And then, yeah, and then.
I don't know, but look, it's a matter of a few months, if not a year or two max. And these things are going to be shooting the lights out, you know. I don't see a problem with that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Mark Manson and that thing's entirely trained on your style of writing and it can do and access the entire internet and find all of the best sources and curate that down and then rewrite that in your tone, then like, you know, you don't need to be writing anything.
You don't need to be. I actually even think content creation itself is going to be up for question, because if everything's going to be video based and it's all being created by AI, the only thing left for us, and this is what I've been saying for a few months now, and I'm going to carry on saying it, is the only trend that you can think about moving forward is IRL. IRL. Only. In real life. Nothing else. Mm. You don't know, is the music legit? Is the AI is creating movies, writing books, all the generative AI stuff, that's going to become zero cost. So you putting out content out there, you're competing against the best of the best of the best of AI. I don't know if you can even come close to, and again, think about it, it'll be hyper-personalized AI. So you'll most probably get a very different version of a story based on the way you want to engage with it, which means that whatever content I create, IRL, bro. I can't see anything online becoming valuable. It's going to become less and less valuable over time.
Listen, so moving on from AI, you have recently been to MIT. How's that been?
I made a couple posts about it and I just wrote my newsletter on it. And the theme that I've been pondering on myself is how much I hated academia when I was a kid. And I just detested it. I would avoid and cheat at all exams because I just felt so frustrated. My brain just was so uncomfortable in that world of academia. And to be invited to go speak at MIT, almost the pinnacle of all academia next to Harvard and Cambridge and Oxford, was just an incredible experience, and also incredible internal dialogue to be invited to go and do that. And then ran with 3 hours with them, which felt like 5 minutes because I didn't feel stressed at all. And then I got them to do one of my meditations, which they loved. Many of them have never meditated before. And then got subsequently booked for a couple other events straight after that event. And it was just amazing being there, like just amazing walking through those halls. And often like in my own ego to myself is like, oh, have you studied at Harvard? Oh, that's amazing. I lecture at MIT from time to time. That's a totally different ego statement. Than studying there, but actually lecturing there, which I would love to go and study there because I can imagine there must be unbelievable teachers that are teaching all sorts of different things there. So yeah, it's been amazing. Boston was amazing. Beautiful city. Wow. Lily White. It's amazing. In America, you get these towns that are lily white, just like white people upon white people, service people are white, everything's white. And it's weird because you don't really see that around the world. You know, obviously in Dubai, you don't. It's a melting pot. South Africa, you obviously don't. London, you don't. Like maybe in parts of England, going up into Midlands, you'll get that. But in America, like in Colorado, Boston, very, very white, which is an interesting, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just very interesting for you to experience that. I suppose you go to India, it's all Indian. Wow, surprise, surprise. And so you go to China and it's all Chinese. Oh, surprise, surprise. I mean, suppose this is like a white sort of cities. But Boston is beautiful. Eh? Wow, what a fantastic city. And then lots of nature. And so I spent 2 days in Boston, spent some time with friends. And MIT was an incredible experience. So yeah, one fun for the...
Who were you speaking for?
They're called Return of the Masterminds. And it's corporate education with... So it's the guys are part of EO and YPO, but it's not an EO and YPO event. It is a offshoot of EO and YPO people that wanted to study further and go deeper. And so they've called it the Mastermind 3-year program. And this is the return of the Mastermind. So this is, they finished their 3-year program. Now they want to continue studying like an alumni of corporate training, based on it's from a company called Legacy something. I actually don't know. But yeah, really great crowd. And I know when I'm preparing for a talk and I'm talking about changing your brain, and when I start to add in psychedelics information, I know that crowd's going to be great. And I did a whole thing on psychedelics and what it does to your brain and why it's so important. And so I like those crowds because you have it's not corporate, because in corporate, you're worried that HR is sitting there and your boss is sitting there. So you can't really ask all the questions you want to ask. But in this sort of setting, everybody's very free and very relaxed and, you know, but open in having very frank conversations. So it was very good.
And I saw that you were, it's a talk that I haven't seen you give before. Maybe you just framed it differently. You call it the adaptability framework?
No, I call it the adaptable intelligence framework.
There we go. Yes, that's what I'm
AI,
for.
Bro. AI, adaptable intelligence. No, what happened was I worked with somebody from London Speakers Bureau to reformat my copy. And she said to me, it's good to be known for a framework that you've developed. Do you have one? I was like, of course I do. So I just explained it to her. She said, that's perfect. She says, what do you want to call that framework? I was like, I have no idea. So I put everything into ChatGPT, and then we started thinking about names. And I don't know how many different iterations eventually we ended up on adaptable intelligence. So what it is, and I've explained it on the pod before, it's simplifying the future, elevating your awareness, and restructuring your organization.
Oh, got it.
It's simple. I mean, it's my work. It's just I've packaged it differently. And now I can run three to 6 hour workshops on that information because I've got so much of it, you know?
It's always so tough because I fundamentally agree with the idea that you want to be known for one thing. It's always so tough when you have to sit down and do that, because we don't want to actually be known for one thing. Like, we actually do lots of things, and there's like quite a few things that we end up talking about. And so whenever you want to like niche down and like, this is the one thing, you know, to be known for, it kind of feels quite constricting. Like, have you not, and you would be the first one that I would think would buck against it, to be honest.
It allows me to be categorized in a way that clients know what they can get from me quickly. And I think that in the South African market, you can be pretty broad in what you speak about.
Yeah.
I think as you move into the more international, you have to be very, very niche. So that people understand what your niche is about. And often, sometimes I get booked for events and it's totally out of my niche. And I'm like, I don't know anything about what you're saying. I think gone are the days where you can create very bespoke keynotes, because you can't be an expert at everything. And if you're just going to go research and look up ChatGPT and Google and then research that information, you're not coming in as a specialist. You're coming in as you curated some stories. I think that was valid 10, 15 years ago. I think you could easily do that. I think in this day and age, you've got to be very, very clear on your niche. And a lot of agents in America have said to me, we understand you speak about AI, but what aspect of it? Because we get requests for AI speakers, but it's a never-ending string of what part of AI do you want to talk about? So I think it's given me an ability to frame my thinking and then package it in a way that then also, if people want an aspect of it, I can tell them there's other aspects of the work. It's also a selling on process, you know? So if you book me just for simplifying the future, I'm like, look, if you aren't elevating your people and restructuring your organization, you've only really just started the process. Or if they want me to restructure, like before we restructure, we have to simplify. And so anyway, so it's been interesting, you know, but also I've decided that I want to try everything new. You know, it's like, I want to experiment with different processes, and getting coaching from people that have been in the game for 20, 30 years is important, because she was actually advising me on how bookers look at websites. And you have to be very simple, very clear, very early. And I think a lot of us get caught up in our own cleverness. You know what I always related to, Eric? Is, you know, when you go to a kitchen or a restaurant and you start being told that you're now going to have the jus of 3-day-old pomegranate juice over mint and pine. I mean, you're like, dude, just can I just have a roast chicken and veg, please? Thank you very much. Keep moving. Come here with the jus of the moo of the coo of the loo. I mean, get out of here. So I think what happens to us when we become too academically involved in our own work is we want to be clever for the sake of being clever, because we think the stuff we know is quite rudimentary and boring. And just having a great fried chicken meal is actually a fantastic meal. But no, no, no. We got to zhu it with the kuet and the muet. So I think we also have to become more clear on the fact that the world doesn't see what we see all the time. And the basics that we follow sometimes is very, very enlightening for many audiences. And so, yeah, it's a constant process of stretching into what's new and then coming back down to basics.
Yeah. It's I fundamentally like the idea of being, you know, specialized to that degree and having a, like being in a box. And this is what I found when I was doing Better Man all those years ago, was that people are very, like, they want to put you into a box. They want to be able to categorize you very easily because they don't want to do the mental gymnastics of figuring out who you are, what you do, what you stand for. So if you can lessen that load for them, then it's easier for them to connect to you. But what I found with Better Man was that once, so I had that framing, that box in people's mind. And then when I started moving into keynote speaking, it, you know, I had to break that box because they couldn't take me out of that box and just easily put me into the new box. So it was great when I met new people because new people only met me in the new box, right? And that was amazing. Yes. But those who had been on the journey with me, they struggled to kind of bring it along. And it took them a long
time
to change.
That's a great thing to move into a new country. Is that you don't bring any of your old stories with you.
Yes.
Yeah, you change your environment, which means you can show up differently. You're a brand new person.
Yeah.
That's the exciting thing about Dubai. It's like you can arrive and like reinvent, you know. Even in the States, in fact, it's so big. You can constantly reinvent yourself. I think in South Africa, we have such a small microcosm of a culture. You kind of like, you know, in these bigger places, you're invisible. You're anonymous, you know. That's why I love traveling so much because you're constantly anonymous and timeless. Because you don't really have, you're not stuck to anybody's time. There's no 9 to 5. There's no traffic. There's no, your schedule of time is different. Your time zones are different. Your language is different. Everything's like, you're constantly in these timeless bubbles all over the world. It's an incredible experience. And you're invisible. Totally invisible. You're anonymous. Nobody knows you. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to see you again. You're not going to see them again.
Which is great and also terrible.
And everybody thinks, well, look, yes and no.
Yeah, exactly.
In this context of just... I think what happens is without us realizing is you show up at your normal coffee shop, but you're playing the role of that Eric that fits into that world. You know, in that world, you have X amount of money, you have X amount of comparisons, you have X amount of paddle games behind you, your marriage, how beautiful your wife is, how beautiful the other person's wife is. And you've built these stories and they're very minuscule little stories. But I know when I arrive at the paddle thing at Camps Bay in Cape Town, I know the cars, I know who they're linked to, I know who's there, I know the stories I have with them, I know who I am when I show up there. And so when I'm an international, there is zero story because I don't know anybody and nobody knows me. And so yes, it's good, but it's also very freeing to have that sort of experience. Is you and often people say to me, geez, you must get up to no good being invisible. Well, no, because nobody knows you. So you have no network of doing anything. So like, it's not like you get up to no good with who, at where, because you don't know anything. Like, I don't know how to get up to no good. So you end up just walking from one restaurant to another, just like seeing the views and just like carry on. You know, like yesterday I was having lunch in Boston and here I am with you now in Dubai. It's like,
I totally agree with you. I think that's one of the great things about travel is that it allows you to see outside of the story that you've built and the routines and the rituals
for yourself,
and the habits that you have.
Yeah,
for sure. Because that's all we are at the end of the day. You know, we literally are just these self-created stories.
Exactly. And then the more you stay where you are, the more that story reiterates itself. And you get caught up in the character that you've created.
It's really powerful to think about that when you feel stuck. Because you realize that your stuckness was self-created and that the way that we look at it, like you create your own reality. But even if you feel like the world around you put you into a survival mode, then it's still about the story that you tell yourself for the future that you are creating, right? Like future memories. And there's a great story. So I went to be one of the judges for Veuve Clicquot. They have this thing called the Bold Women Awards every year. And this was my third year adjudicating for them. And it's always interesting.
Are you the only guy on the judge?
No, I used to be. Panel. I used to be. And then last year they introduced Timothy Maurice. So he's now also joined, and he comes very much from a sort of personal branding and neuroscience background. So every year, what's quite interesting is that like these women have gone through incredible trials and tribulations to get to where they are. And it always makes me so almost grateful for the journey that I've been on, which hasn't been as hectic as what they've experienced. But this one lady, she grew up in a township here in SA. And for those of you who might not know what a township is, it's a very poor area, usually on the outskirts of a city, informal settlements. Say again?
I was saying it's like a favela in Brazil. It's homes that have been built without the government's permission because it's a poor, it's informal settlements. That's what it is.
Yes. And so she was sitting in one of these townships, and when her friends would call her, that she'd say, like they'd ask, "Where are you?" And she'd say, "I'm in Sandton." And Sandton is a very upmarket area in Joburg. Probably, I think it's the richest square mile in Africa.
Clifton is.
Oh, is it not? Oh, okay. But there is some stat around Sandton.
I think Sandton, and as far as sort of like
business.
Business concerns.
Yeah.
It's not residential. Yeah.
Not residential, business. And so she would always say, like, I'm in Sandton. And her friends would be like, "Ah, what you on about? Like, you're literally like here, like next to us. We know where you are." And where does she live today? She lives in Sandton. And it was just that she always told herself a different story. And eventually that story created her reality. And she said in that interview as well that she never let her friends like get into her mind. Like she never allowed them to say anything to the contrary, because she believed it and she knew that it was going to come to pass. And I just love that story. You know, she was so proud of what she has created. And it started with that. It started with her words.
It started with her lying to her friends that she was insane.
Yeah.
Where are you? I'm sitting in business class. No, you're not. I can see an economy. Shut up. I'm in business class. Shut up.
Love that.
Listen, dude. What's on for the rest of the week? Where are you traveling to next?
I'm traveling to Cape Town. I'm actually going to have lunch with you, Eric. What are you talking about?
Why is this not a highlight of your life, man, having lunch
with you and Richard Mulholland? Oh, Richie Mulholland is going to be there. So Rich and I he's closing our conference. I'm opening it. And we decided to have lunch, the three of us.
Mm.
And then also I'm doing my new website is being launched, new video reel, new photos, new everything. So that's all happening at the moment. So I'm really looking forward to that. Looking forward to introducing this new vibe to the world. I'm just back from another week in the States. Had a fantastic time. Spent time with Yossi, my friend in New York. Had a really good time. Yossi listens to the pod, so they're sending you love, brother. Doing some incredible things. Jeez, his business ideas are next level. How cutting edge he's sitting with Ethereum and Bitcoin and what they're up to there. It's really cutting edge. Just settling back into Dubai, enjoying Dubai for the next week or two, and then come to Cape Town and spend some time with you, and then come back to Dubai. And yeah, I don't know, just we'll see. It's now going into summer holidays. So Dubai starts to slow down, Europe starts to slow down, America starts to slow down. The only place that really is kind of doing any sort of business, America is a little bit, but definitely South Africa. So yeah, I'll be moving to Cape Town July, August. So I'll be there for most of July, August. And so yeah, looking forward to having a bit of a change of scenery.
It's so funny that you're coming here for winter. When everyone tries to escape winter, you are coming back for winter.
So. Well, you understand that everywhere else in the world is chaos. And as far as Europe is chaos. I've been there. I know what it's like. You being in Rome at 38 degrees and it's so fucking busy. Sorry, I didn't mean to swear. It's so busy and you're like, what am I doing here? Like, why? I'm sweating in my clothes. So actually being in Cape Town, it's quiet. It's cool. It's a very different experience. And then obviously in Dubai, you can't be here in July, August. It's just too hot. So where are you going to go? Like, America is too expensive. Like, it's crazy expensive. I mean, the hotels in America, they're so terrible. Like, they must be the worst hotels in the world. I'm being dramatic. But the worst hotels and the most expensive. And the staff could not give a toss to be serving you at all. They really could not be. Where you compare it to Dubai and the service is immaculate. there, they I promise you, they think, you know, the staff that I felt the most bullied by are the baristas in Rome and Italy. Have you been?
Yeah, I've been to Rome and Italy. I can't say that I've had that experience.
So you go to the bar and you want to order a coffee, and the guy is, or the girl, she's unpacking the cups, or she's, I don't know, fixing the bean machine, right? She's doing something. They're doing something. So I'm like, can I have a... She's like, wait. So I got to wait there. And then they finish what they're doing. Only when they finish what they're doing, they look up to me and go, can I help you? And that power dynamic is so like, yeah, I got to stand there like a little child waiting for your teacher to tell you that you can order. So yeah, that's America. So yeah, I think the best place to be honest, I mean, I've done my research. I think the best place to be is to be in Cape Town in July, August.
Listen, I just realized that I said I've been to Rome and Italy, which is a very...
You've been to both. You have been to both. Yeah, that's okay.
If I tell you geography is like my absolute worst, this just proves it.
Well, I mean, look, you're a kept man in the suburbs of Somerset West. What do you need to know geography for, bro?
Yeah, that's
your
true.
Wife books
that's
the true. Tickets, researches the cities, researches the restaurants, she tells you what geography. You're eating.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
just have to. You're the trophy husband. I mean, and you must settle into that role that you persona. Yeah, a trophy husband. I think that's what I want to go with. Better than house husband.
I prefer husband. Trophy husband as well, to be honest.
Yeah, I think trophy husband's I think it suits you more. Trophy husband.
I like
trophy
that.
Trophy husband.
I like it. Listen, can you just husband. Give everyone watching this on YouTube some context for the stuff that you're sniffing there? Because...
just sniffing. I got so many, bro. Let me show you the range that I have. You won't believe it.
I hope YouTube doesn't demonetize us for using sniffing stuff. Well,
look at it. I got four different sniffers. Look at these sniffers. This one's Tiger Balm. This one's Vicks Inhaler. This one's a Golden Cup Balm from Thailand. And this one's something else from Thailand. And all of these are because of TikTok. And I see people sniffing these things on TikTok. And the guy's like, I see everybody in Thailand sniffing this thing. So I want to go buy it. So he goes into 7-Eleven and he buys it and he does this. And he's like, oh my God. Like, geez, it wakes you up. It's like almost like having a
like with those
cold plunge in your nostrils. No, it's cold plunge in your nostrils.
You know, those weightlifters always do that, like that salt they ingest that like hypes them up.
I don't know about that. I've never done that before. But this is like having a menthol cold plunge up your nostrils. So imagine the, like, it wakes you up. Like, it's like this, it like opens up all your breathing pathways. And so every time I see a new one, I buy one and try it out. So, oh, it's so good, dude. It like really does, like, it opens up your brain, you know? It does look dodgy, though. Because anything sniffing is dodgy.
It does look dodgy.
This is not dodgy. Yeah, Yesterday, I was doing it in the Uber when I was going from my hotel to the airport. And the driver was looking at me. I was like, I'm not going to tell him. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Get sniffing it. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
All right, dude. Listen, it was great catching up with you. 250 episodes down. What a pleasure. And award-winning podcast into best-selling book. What a pleasure. And so amazing to have everyone on the journey with us. Thank you to everyone who has subscribed, who's commented, who has attended a book launch, who has commented on a post. We really appreciate all of you very deeply. And we love that you are part of this journey as well.
Good. Thank you so much, man. And thank you, Eric. It's been a pleasure. 250 episodes. Bloody hell. That's a long-term relationship, huh?
Yeah.
I never knew I'd be such close friends with a kept man like Eric Kruger. Okay.
Trophy husband.
Yes. Shit. Sorry. Trophy husband. All right, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Until next week. Ciao.